Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. I'm your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. Everybody at my house has spring break on the brain. What's happening in your world?
Yeah, we're a week away. My kid is off. Next week, we're going to San Francisco.
Oh, baby. Do they still have the, is it seals or walrus? What is it that's out there at that wharf, or have they gotten rid of them?
No, I'm sure they're still there. I hope. I told my kid they're going to be there.
Yeah? So you're going to do the seafood thing? What are you going to go to wine country? That'd be fun.
I don't know if we are, because we're meeting a friend of mine that has little kids, and my kid's under 18, so.
Well, I would look forward to seeing Max at the wine tasting, because, you know, it doesn't take very many stops.
He's a big drinker.
So we have a great show. We have a studio full this morning. Yep. It's going to be a lot of fun. And in a little bit later in the program, we're going to hear from someone in the digital rights arena. We're going to hear from some high-tech farmers. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce a lady with Ready, Set, Go, Make Money. Welcome to the show, Wendy Kinney.
Thank you, Stone.
I love the name of this enterprise. Give us a little bit of a feel for what you're out there doing for folks.
Well, my area of focus and research is on referral marketing. There are two ways to get new clients, and they're the opposite of each other.
So say more about that.
I think that we each need to be bilingual. We need to be able to sell, and we need to be able to flip a switch and speak the language of referrals when we're not in a sales situation. Best case, when we use a sales script in a non-sales situation, we're ineffective. Worst case, we're offensive. I'd rather be invisible than offensive.
Now, you mentioned that you do a lot of research in referrals. How do you go about doing this research? Is it your own research, or you're getting information from other people?
Oh, gosh, no, I follow everyone. One of the people right now who is doing a lot in the topic of referrals is Dr. Tiziana Cascara. She's at University of Toronto. I had the great pleasure to sit at her feet in November. She's Greek, she's funny, and she's got good stuff.
So you mentioned research. Mm-hmm. Are there some specific numbers that you try to share with your clients, or that we might find a little bit surprising or interesting?
There's a lot of information around referrals. Let's just start with something that just came out from the National Association of Realtors. They asked people who had bought homes in the last 3 years whether their experience with their realtor was good and whether they would use the same realtor if they were going to purchase another home. And 91% of them said yes. Only 9% did.
That is a very interesting number. So a lot of them said yes, but only a very small fraction did. And why do they say one thing and do another, you think?
Well, there's a lot of questions around that. There's a guy named Lindstrom who wrote the book Why People Don't Buy Stuff. And he used fMRI research and found that when people ask us how we would like them to follow through with them, we lie.
You wouldn't do that, would you?
So what do we say and what do we
In other
want?
Words, we say, send me something by email, okay. And then we filter them out, or we don't read it. Or we say, give me a call, and then we let it go to voicemail and we don't return the call. So one of the things that's important is for us as business people to realize that we have to pay attention and develop systems in all three modalities, not just think that we can do what everyone else does or what people tell us to do.
Now, fMRI was something you just
functional
mentioned.
Functional magnetic resonance.
Okay, so they're actually looking into
looking
my brain
at the
and
brain.
Seeing what's happening. Boy, they would not see much for some So the things line up differently depending.
Yeah.
That's something.
Isn't that amazing?
So now, but what you're saying is kind of frustrating to me, because it's a lot of negative information in terms of what you really have to do to move the ball.
Yeah, so you want to know what to do?
What to do.
So a couple of things. First of all, recognize that 40% of the time, people who know us and like us miss referral opportunities for us.
Right, absolutely.
Simply because they don't recognize them.
And including family members.
Exactly, including people you sleep with.
Right, exactly.
So the piece here that's important is to understand what it takes to get recognition. And it takes two things, color and motion. And so a really easy way to develop color and motion is to tell stories. Stories are the single thing we can do when people ask us, what do you do? If we respond with a story, we've got color and motion, we've got retention, we've got recognition.
So I was wondering, do you have a story that kind of reflects this kind of thinking?
I do. Scott Bowen Watt came to talk to me because she had not generated any referrals in a year and a half, even though she's a public relations professional who's done work with the Dutch government and the Tulip Association and other very high-end people.
Right.
I shared with her the difference between using I and we language, which generates sales, you and we language, which generates sales, and I and they language, which generates referrals. And the next time I saw her, she gave me a big hug. She said she had put $60,000 in the bank because the people who she was talking to were sending her clients who turned into referrals who turned into clients.
So can you, I understand those pronouns, but can you give me an example of each?
Sure.
And what one?
Sure.
What they
if you
like?
Say to me, Wendy, what do you do? And I say to you, Lee, I help you take your business to the next level. What I do for you is help you make sure that when your clients are looking. And,
right.
and so this is a sales pitch.
Right.
And we need to be able to use that language in a sales situation. The opposite of that is the I and they language. When my client, Scott, was frustrated because she wasn't getting referrals, I showed her what the difference was
right.
between sales language and referral language.
So when you refer to it, you're telling us a story
telling
about her.
Telling a story about someone else.
That's kind of incorporating your skills
Absolutely.
In the story.
Absolutely. And that's an important part of it. I have a template for that. It's called PAR for golfers. Problem, action, result. So it's the client's problem. What was happening? Scott wasn't getting referrals. My action. What did I do? I shared with her the difference between you language and I language. And then the client's result. She put $60,000 in the bank.
Now, that is really smart. I mean, I'm 2 minutes into this conversation. I want to refer people to you already. but let's get tactical there,
sure.
too. So let's say I meet Joe,
mm-hmm.
and I know Joe's struggling with his business a little bit, mm-hmm. could really use some help. We've had enough of this conversation that I really do have a good feeling for mm-hmm. the work that you do, and maybe you've shared enough stories that you've built some credibility.
Right.
What should I be saying to Joe to tee you up properly, and how should I manage that piece of it?
The most important thing is for you to share with Joe why you think I'm the right person for him, as opposed to 60 other people who do what I do. And that will probably have to do with something that we have in common. So you might say, you're going to like working with her, she's a researcher. Or you might say, you're going to like working with her, she pays attention to exactly what you say, not what you should be saying. And so when you share the reason why he's going to like working with me, then it's a done deal. He's not going to question me about price. He's not going to ask about the competition. He's not going to ask about anything. He's going to say, okay, if Stone knows that we're the same, I can feel comfortable doing business with her.
Now, isn't that a challenge that a lot of business owners faces, that they kind of move to price too quickly? Like they want to, they kind of look at themselves as a commodity. I mean, I know they don't do it on purpose, but in essence, that's what they're doing.
That's a difference between sales scripts and mm-hmm. referral scripts. Referral scripts always include price. Sales scripts don't.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a mistake, because if you don't tell me how much it costs, if I say, hey, Lee, how much does it cost to go to San Francisco? And you say, well, you know, we're flying first class. I'm going to think it's expensive.
Right.
But if you simply give me a price, I'm either going to go, oh, wow, that's a good deal. Or I'm going to go, ooh, I want to do that, but it'll take me 3 months to save for it.
Right.
Or I'm going to go, not for me. And so, any of those answers are good.
Right. So you're not afraid to talk about money right off the
bat. In a referral situation, it's essential to talk about money right off the bat. In a sales situation, the standard sales script is never talk about money until first you've established value. And that may be true in sales. I'm not an expert in sales. In referrals, I know that that's not true.
And what about technology? You have a fantastic presence. The minute you walk into a room, people say, oh, Wendy's here, right?
Right.
And I mean, I'm remembering you from like 2 years ago, right? They're like, oh, yeah, that's Wendy. Are you able to allow any of this to translate into the technology, the platforms, the LinkedIns, the Facebooks and all of that? Yeah?
So there's some new research out about LinkedIn. And people who on LinkedIn or Facebook have fewer than 250 friends or contacts make more money than people who have more than 250.
Well, I'm feeling better already. I think I've got a shot at this one.
You're winning.
So I want to share with you something before we leave this topic. I want to share with you something about Dr. Cascara. But the piece here that's important is that when we are generating referrals, we can use everything, and we have to use everything. People have preferences. They prefer either to see things or to hear things. Your clients prefer to hear things rather than read things, or to meet face to face. It's essential for us to do all three. We cannot assume that simply by sending an email newsletter every week or every month will attract all customers. We have to move through all three modalities. And then when we identify someone's preference, it's our responsibility to switch that preference. And the good news is that we'll get a referral or close a sale in 5 to 7 contacts. 5 if we very quickly learn what their preferred modality is. 7 if it takes us 2 rotations. Or 11 contacts if our product is so new or so unique that potential clients don't even know what we do. So that's our responsibility, I believe, to have 11 follow-through systems in each modality ready to go so that we can just cycle through. One of my visual modalities is a LinkedIn invitation. But I never let LinkedIn scrape my email. I never let it send the standard, connected to you. I always send a, Stone, thanks so much for the interview on Radio X this week. I'd be honored to connect to you on LinkedIn. Because if I don't do that, then there's nothing that differentiates me from anybody else who just lets LinkedIn scrape their email.
Right,
because
if I get that, I'm just as likely to not only connect with you, but also remember somebody that we interview later in the day and say, Wow, you ought to check out this Wendy Kinney lady.
Right. Then you have a shot at that. If you do the standard boilerplate one, then you're just kind of lost amongst all the other ones that have done that.
Yeah. Can we go one more step on LinkedIn? Just because I think it's a really important tool for businesses. When I ask you to introduce me to someone, when I say to you, hey, Stone, I see that you're connected to Lee. Would you please introduce me to Lee? That's a real waste of time. Because I haven't told you anything other than, hey, Stone, I see that you're connected to Lee, and I want Lee to write me a check. And that's offensive.
Right.
So I have to say to you, when I ask you to connect me to Lee through LinkedIn, I have to tell you why the result that Lee wants after talking to me, after working with me. I have to say, I can see that Lee's got a second studio going on, and I presume he's got designs for an empire. I'd like to speak with him about doing some business while he's out in San Francisco. Could you please connect us? And that will give you the tool you need to refer to me. Otherwise, it's just a cold call.
Right. And I find that I get a lot of people using LinkedIn to, like, right away, I meet them one time, and they're like, can you refer me? I just met you last week. Yeah. You know?
No, I get those.
You say no.
How do you vet the people? Because I know you meet tons of people. How do you vet them when they say, you know, can you introduce me to all these people? Because you know a million people. You're not opening up your Rolodex to every single person
that you run into. I'm not. So I'm really good at 2 things. Number one, I'm really good at realizing that if they're obtuse enough to think that I would open up my Rolodex to them, they wouldn't be offended by the same things I would be offended by. So if they're able to say, hey, would you introduce me to Bob and Sam and Sally and Jean, they won't be offended when I say back to them, let me know why they want to talk to you. Because they don't have the same level of manners or etiquette or social awareness, social cues that we would have that let us know that that's offensive. So I do. I say back to them. I say, let me know what's in it for them, why they want to talk to you, and I'll be happy to make the introduction. And I've never yet had anybody come back to me with anything real. I've had them come back to me with, I can sell them. I can help them. Right. There's no referral and help, ever, ever.
Now, do you highly structure your day, your week, to incorporate all of these strategies?
Because if I don't, they don't get done.
Right.
Right? So I have several tools that I use, and none of them use technology. They're all paper and pen.
Interesting.
Yeah, because if a little window comes up and says, call Stone, it's real easy to hit snooze, and then 15 minutes later snooze, and 15 minutes later snooze, and at 3 o'clock in the afternoon dismiss, and then I don't get you called. So I don't use technology as a follow-through system, although I want to do an app, but I don't think it'll work. Yeah, but I don't think it'll work because people just hit snooze.
So you do that. You spend a lot of time on it, but this is your business.
I do 3 a day. I do three a day. I don't spend a lot of time. I do three a day.
So, but if you sold coffee cups, would you do three a day as well? You would.
I would. So let me give you, let me tell you what three a day is. I was speaking with Bill Linkwald, who is a residential realtor in the Norcross Peachtree Corners area. And he shared with me that he has 750 people who he has helped to buy or whose home he has sold. Well, you know what that is? That's three phone calls a day, Monday through Friday. He could make a phone call to every single person he's ever done business with once a year. When's the last time your realtor called you?
Yeah.
When my check cleared when I left the
exactly.
house.
Exactly. Yeah. I do get the postcard when she sells a new one.
Right.
Yeah. Big whoop, like you care about that,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, right.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. So in one phone call a day, he could stay in touch with every single person he's ever bought or sold a house from. Now, do you want me to turn that into more money?
Well, let me say real quick,
yeah.
Did you see, she does eat her own cooking. She told the story.
Right.
She didn't just, that's great. I mean, it's not just
that
theory.
That wasn't an accident.
No, there was no accident. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So the woman who is the highest grossing realtor in the world lives in Canada. And in 2009, I don't have her more recent numbers, but in 2009, she spent over $1 million on gift baskets. Now, if she spent $1 million, imagine what she's keeping, right? She sends a gift basket to every person who has ever bought or sold a house with her every year on their closing date. I mean, doesn't this just make you shiver?
Yeah, that's amazing.
That does.
So, yes, I believe in systems.
Yeah. And you need to know that it's just proper etiquette to send gift baskets to everyone
who interviews you.
Because I'm an expert in that.
Got that.
This is fascinating to me. We've got to continue this conversation. We've got to get you back in the studio sometime. But before we let you go this time,
sure.
Let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you and learn more.
My website is readysetgomakemoney.com. My name is Wendy Kinney. And I can be reached through email at wendy@wendykinney.com. And I'm on LinkedIn at Wendy Kinney. And it's Kinney with an I, K-I-N-N-E-Y. There is a Wendy Kinney with an E in Arizona who also does business referrals.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah, we've met each other. To our knowledge, we've never been up for the same job. So that's interesting.
That's interesting.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio this morning. Hey, how about hanging out with us while we visit with our
next
guest?
I would love to. It would be my pleasure.
Terrific. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show is Senior Director, Writer, Publisher, and in the Public Relations Arena with CSAC, Mr. Cap Skatz. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Honored to be here.
Well, that sounds like a fun job. How do you get one of those, man?
You know, a lot of prayer and diligence. That's what I'll tell you.
So what's CSAC? I don't think many of our listeners may not know.
CSAC is a performing rights organization. It is our job every time your songs are being played on the radio, restaurants, hotels, wherever music's being played publicly or performed live. It's our job to collect the royalties that are being earned from those songs and to pay them to the songwriters and publishers of those songs.
Can you walk us through a little bit of the math of that? Because I don't think people understand. I used to own a fitness center one time, and just by playing music in our fitness center, we had to pay, you know, one of those organizations like yours.
Yeah, it just requires a license. So anytime that music is being played, wherever it appears publicly, you know, those songwriters and publishers of those songs are actually being paid a residual based on those performances.
But how is it all collected? How is the how do you know what songs are being played at the you know, at any given location, and how does it filter back to any given songwriter or performer?
Well, typically when you're talking about locations like restaurants, hotels, and that sort of thing, that's just a blanket license which covers all of the songs that are part of our repertory.
Right.
When you get to radio, we use a system called BDS, which is the Broadcast Data System.
Uh-huh.
BDS is in 190 markets, monitoring over 1,600 radio stations, 24/7, 365.
Right.
So whatever goes into making a song, the kick drum, the hi-hat, the bass, the snare, whatever goes into making a song creates a frequency, and there's no song that's alive. So even if you were to sample a song, if you do something to it, you would in essence change the frequency.
Right.
That frequency is loaded into BDS and it's considered
it's like a
digital fingerprint pattern.
Right.
Yeah. And so within an 80-second interval, it checks three times. At the first, the second, at the third time, it confirms it as an official BDS detection and we count it as one, two, three. So every time
you're keeping like kind of little tally marks for every single.
Absolutely. Yes.
Now, how in a lot of music today, there are sampling and there's mashups and they're doing all kinds of stuff to music that already existed before. So you're able to kind of pull out their little snippets and then give credit to the people who
Well, what happens is those particular performances are actually put together as a sample related to that particular fingerprint. So right. every song is unique, but that sort of gathering
of
songs. Yeah,
but if they grab chunks of songs and put
They would have to clear those songs in order for that to be considered a usable song in terms of the performances of it.
Now, is there any amount of time that you're allowed to do without paying anybody?
Absolutely not. People think that, but no. No,
like
absolutely
a second?
Not. No. As minuscule as a second. It's still, you know, it's the original contributing author still sharing that in that work, and they're uh-huh. entitled to be paid.
And so is it just a little bit of money and it all adds up because a lot of people are playing it, or is it a lot of money right up front?
Well, it actually, people refer to the publishing business as a crumbs business. And so those crumbs equal a nice loaf of bread at some point. So that's
right.
what happens.
So what? Tell us a little bit about a day in the life of Cap. What do you do day to day?
Wow. You know, my main responsibility is to number one, sign new songwriters and publishers to the company. Number two, to sustain the many great songwriters and publishers that we currently represent. And number three, to brand the company. But less of an emphasis on branding, more about taking care of songwriters and publishers. I am sincerely troubled when a person can have a number one record on the radio, get a toothache, and can't go to the dentist because they don't have insurance. So a lot of what I focus on is outside of the letters of CSAC, because this is more than just letters. This is really about people.
Now, are there cases where somebody could have a number one song and then really the money never trickles back to them?
Oh, absolutely. I see that sort of stuff happen all the time. And that's just simply a matter of someone not registering their songs or doing the due diligence of making mm-hmm. sure that they're, you know, they're doing what they're supposed to do in terms of registering songs and just engaging the company. And that's really what it boils down to a lot.
Now, with music nowadays, it seems like so many artists are putting their stuff out there for free on the internet. Is that impacting your business at all?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, the labels, their revenue streams are declining. However, in our world, you know, there's more places to monetize. There's more places where music is being discovered and heard than any time ever before,
right.
especially with new media. So it's a different time for us. We're actually making more money, whereas the record labels are
making less.
But
so what is the financial model for you guys? The artists pay you to protect their rights, I guess?
What happens is they don't actually pay us. When they come to us, they are in essence saying, you know, I would like to have someone represent my interests in terms of those blanket licenses. And so they are not actually paying us. We're making our money on the fees when we actually secure that
license. Okay, so I don't have to come out of pocket.
No.
I was going to say you're paying for protection, and that just didn't sound right.
Yeah, but what as I understand it, what you're doing is now you kind of get a stable of artists that whose rights that you are kind of monitoring out
sure.
there on the wherever the world is,
right?
And to make sure they get paid every time that their music is being played somewhere.
Absolutely. Technically, you don't need a company like CSAC, but the issue becomes you'd have to, number one, be very popular in order to leverage those licenses, and you'd
right.
have to be able to secure those licenses.
Yeah, how would me as an individual, no matter how popular my stuff is, how can I know what's happening, you know, in Denmark?
Sure.
So
you utilize a company like CSAC because we've been in business for 82 years. And so
right, and you're out there,
absolutely.
And you're already plugged in.
And
everywhere.
That is our ongoing business. We license about 585 new places every single month, and so that's
right.
what we do.
Sure.
And so are there other areas of music marketing that you get into, or do you take advantage of some of the strategies and tactics our last guest talked about, and when an artist needs effective marketing, you refer them to people that know how to market them?
Absolutely. It's more referral based in that way. You know, of course, we work with managers and we do panels and showcases and seminars. So there's a lot more to it than just that portion in terms of collecting royalties. Inside of the music, there's families, there's wives, there's husbands, there's dogs, there's cats. So it's a lot more in music than just only music. And unfortunately, what I see with most artists is they get trapped in show. There's a little word show and a big word business. And unfortunately, most artists are caught in show. And they're all typically romanticized by their own talent. And that becomes the fundamental issue as it relates to artists. They want to be famous, and that's really
right.
what you see more often than
not. And do they end up spending a lot of money early on family and entourage?
Absolutely not. You know, and I'm probably guilty of that myself. You know, I've been in the business for a long time. It's probably 20 years before I learned the order of God, family, and work, mm-hmm. and really knowing how to separate those things. And I think for me now, that's sort of my passion, is just relaying that information to artists so they make the right steps, or at least we try to do the best that we can along the way.
Now, we've interviewed a lot of people in the sports arena where there's a ton of athletes that make a fortune and then are bankrupt as soon as their career ends. Is it similar in the music
world? No question about it. I think, again, you know, most artists are just focused on, you know, getting it is not the problem. It's maintaining it. And most people are focused on getting
it. Hard.
Well, yeah, but, you know, you get a wife, a mansion, and a Bentley. If you don't maintain it, you get divorced, foreclosed, and repos. And so it's not about getting it. It's about maintaining it. And unfortunately, most people are just focused on, I want a number one record. I want to win a Grammy. And they're not realizing that, sure, if you're good at what you do, you're going to win a Grammy. That's what people that are good do.
Sure.
But what happens when you win that Grammy? How do you maintain that?
Right.
And so that's the bigger picture that a lot of people are not looking at.
Now, do you spend time coaching them? Is that, I know that's not exactly your role, but it's kind of your role.
Well, it is, because you want to see those people. You know, I personally think that I'm the best to ever do this. However, the only way that I prove it is the people, through the people that I affiliate. And so I want to see those people do well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
and
really
keep
the
their
thing.
Money, not just do well, right?
They absolutely. And you want to know that you've actually made a difference and you've affected a change in music through what you do.
Well, you must be a fantastic salesperson and or really good at this referral stuff, because you're calling on famous people that may very well be a little full of themselves at the moment. That's
absolutely
the people that need you the most,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you even get in front of these people? And then what do you say to them?
I think for the most part, you appeal to their sensibility. Generally, most artists are very ego-driven. And so you sort of take that approach and you say, hey, man, you know, let's make this about you. Because at the end of the day, it really is. I'm a guy that's sort of, there's a puddle on the ground. I lay over it. The artist walks over my back. And no one gives me a towel to dry myself off with when I stand up. And so I already know that. And so I go in with that. And there's really, the one thing that I've learned about all of the artists that I've worked with, there's two things, consistency and humility. Stay humble. Stay consistent. And so whatever, I'm going to get there regardless, just because I'm humble and I'm consistent, and those people appreciate that.
Now, can you share some of the stories of some of the artists you work with?
Stories like what? There's a lot of stories.
I
what
know.
Type of stories?
Yeah, maybe
you
something
hit?
That maybe the person was on the wrong track. Maybe they were being successful with your help, that you were able to kind of get them a little more stable and keeping some of the money that they were making.
I'll give you a perfect example. I had a gentleman who was working at Walmart, a songwriter. And, you know, when he get his Walmart check, he take it to the check cashing place, right?
Right.
And so I'm sitting in my office one day and I get this call from such and such check cashing, and they say, hey, what is CSAC? We have this guy with a $30,000 check here and he wants to cash the check. And I said, put him on the phone. And he gets on the phone and I said, look, you better come to my office right now or I'm going to tell them that this thing is fake. And so the thing is that I realized that, you know, here's a young kid who's working at Walmart. He takes his check to the check cashing place, 1.5%, whatever.
Right.
It's cool. That's what he does. Not realizing that here's a $30,000 check.
Right. He has
you
more
also
resources.
You have, you know, taxes to pay.
Right.
You have a lot more things to consider. And so those are the types of things that that happen with artists. And they just, you know, they're going to buy some jewelry. They're going to buy a car. I mean, the money's going to be spent, and then, you know, nothing to really show for, but not even realizing that this is a business. And that's the biggest thing that I think, that's my challenge every day, is trying to get that information across to the artist.
So were you able to convince him maybe you should get a bank account?
Absolutely. We got him. I called a friend at SunTrust. We got him taken care of, and you know, but that's a true story. And I see things like that happen. You know, the one thing that I learned, you know, it's more than just the music. I had a young lady who her mother was dying, and she called me up and she said, can you come to my house and explain to my mom what CSAC is so she'll know I'll be okay. And there I am at her house telling her mom what we do. We collect royalties. Her daughter's going to be fine. Her mom literally died 1 month after that. You know, I had a young lady who literally got married, had a baby, and got divorced in the same year. And so I sat there, you know, she's in my office crying her eyes out, and I'm going, can I hug her? Can I, do I give her Kleenex? Do I give her a pen? What do I do? But, you know, these are the things that happen where there's more to this thing than just music. And so, unfortunately, everybody's sort of thinking music, 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 but it's the things that happen in your everyday life that will impact your ability to even
you
be successful in the music business. And so that's the focus.
Now, on a day-to-day basis, you mentioned a little bit about what you do. What is the greatest need for CSAC? Do you need more artists? Do you need more places? What is your greatest need?
I think the biggest thing with us is getting the people to realize our value outside of just the fact that every 3 months you go to the mailbox and you get a check.
Check.
I think that's
the people you're saying, the songwriters and
absolutely.
The artists?
Yeah, the affiliates, just getting them to realize to engage the company, tap in, utilize our resources, and take those things and apply them to your career and utilize that to become better and more successful.
Now, is there any type of artist? Are you open to taking the person that has one YouTube video and, you know, just play the song?
Sure. You know, on a scale of one to ten being the best, I may have an occasion to sign a four. But I recognize that four can become an eight or a nine if given the opportunity. And so, you know, we work with people from various levels and all genres.
Uh-huh. So you're open to anybody pretty
much. Absolutely, yeah.
And do you find yourself with in-depth relationships with wealth managers, estate planners, that kind of thing? Do you work closely with them once you get to
know
a client?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Because you need to have the resources as your client grows and has more needs. Sure. You have to point them to the right trusted advisor. I'm sure that's, like you were saying, you got to take care of them.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the main part, is really, you know, building that team and putting the right folks around you.
What are the elements of a team that you would build?
You know, obviously attorneys, managers, booking agents, record labels, publicists, you know, those are all different components.
Right.
And how well you engage determines how successful you are. And unfortunately, most people don't really know how to engage those components. They sort of look at it like, I'm super talented, come along and whisk me away, and I'm just the
best. And I'll just sit back and make music.
But, you know, you walk out of a room and you trip over 8 artists on your way to your car. I mean, that's just the nature of what we do. And
right.
So you have to understand that there's more to this than just, you know, being good. It's, people would say, you know, you have to be a fly in the room. Okay, well, it's not enough to just be a fly in the room. Now you have to be a fly with a cape on. So when you fly by, it's like,
people
like, what
noticing.
In the heck just happened? Like, that fly had a cape on. So that's a whole nother, you know, element to this thing.
Yeah.
This is fascinating to me. I had no idea that this much depth and complexity behind the artist, but this is an important service.
Absolutely.
This is great. So how do they reach out and get in touch with you and learn more?
They can contact us at CSAC.com, of course, and they can reach us in the Atlanta office at AtlantaInfo@CSAC.com or by calling the office 404-897-1330.
Well, this is good stuff. And Lee, as you continue to get more and more famous, I'm not going to let you fall into the pit. I'm going to get Cap on the job,
on
man.
On the job.
Thanks, Cap.
Hey, My pleasure.
Can you hang with us while we...
I'd love to, absolutely.
Terrific. All right. Well, last today, but certainly not least, on the High Velocity Radio Show, we have Brad Bruckman and Matt Liotta, high-tech farmers with Podponics. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Morning. Thank you.
How did we do on the names? Did we pronounce the names right?
Absolutely.
Yeah? So you any relation to Ray?
He's actually a second cousin of my father.
You see there? You thought I was just being silly,
just
didn't
threw
you?
Threw that out there.
That's right.
Good guess.
I like the scene in, what is it, the Hannibal Lecter.
He's in that?
Yeah, he's in the second or third one.
I didn't.
Yeah, he's the cop. So so tell us a little bit about Podponics.
Well, we're a high-tech agriculture organization. What we do is we convert shipping containers into high-tech growing environments for fresh produce. And this allows us to grow produce at the point of consumption as opposed to shipping it all over the world.
And so Podponics, that means growing it upside down, growing it without water. What exactly does that mean?
Well, in our case, it's a variety of different technology that we bring to bear to actually grow the crop. But I think it's almost easier to say what it's not. It's not grown in soil. It's not using sunlight. It's you know, just completely different than what you would think of.
No sunlight.
That's correct.
I think they're pulling our leg. This is candid camera.
Who's the brains behind this?
I founded the company.
So you came up with this idea of how to grow things without soil or
Well, I must say, I mean, you know, growing without soil or sunlight is certainly nothing new.
So you come home at Thanksgiving and you say, Mom, Dad, listen to this. I'm going to grow plants without soil, without sunlight. This was your plan.
Well, it actually came about a little differently than that. I was previously in telecom and my company was acquired and I was sort of looking for something else to do. And at the same time, I had a young daughter who I was paying attention to what she was eating, and I started paying attention to where our produce was coming from, and the answer is not from around here. So as I looked at it, there seemed to be a lot of demand for local produce, but no supply, and that's what we call a business opportunity.
And your partner here, Brad, tell us a little bit about your role with this outfit.
Well, I actually just joined Podponics, and we were talking earlier about stories. And I think that that was one of the things that was really exciting for me as I looked at Matt and his team. One of the best things about Podponics is we harvest and deliver the same day. So it's the freshest lettuce that you could possibly get. Hopefully we'll be in some grocery store shelves soon. And my background was in supply chain management, so I've been on the other side as a customer historically, and then I've also built a couple of businesses that were fairly large-scale distribution production and distribution companies. So when I met Matt and the team and heard the Podponics story, pesticide-free, using old containers, everything about the company is green and a positive change for the world. Most of the lettuce in the U.S. Travels from Salinas, California, which over to here is over 3,000 miles, and now folks in Atlanta, hopefully in short order, will be able to get lettuce that only travels 5-10 miles from the local farm.
Now, you guys came to us because you were a TAG Top 40 Innovative Technology Company in Georgia. How did you get involved with TAG?
Well, I've actually been in the tech community here in Atlanta pretty much my entire career. So I was familiar with TAG before I decided to start a high-tech agriculture company. And, you know, we try and plug into the community because we don't want people to think we're just farmers. We're really more of a software company than really a farming company. So we certainly, you know, have paid attention to TAG, and we're really happy that they recognize this as an innovative company. And, you know, we actually just learned this morning that we were selected as a top 10. And we'll be presenting at TAG on Wednesday.
On Wednesday, which we're going to be there, right? Remote broadcast.
We're doing a remote broadcast from there. Now, I'm not getting the tech part. How does the tech part come into play?
Well, when you think about traditional farming, you know, you've got a bunch of lettuce plants out in the
field. It's on the dirt, right?
That's right.
I'm not a farmer, but that's how I assumed it worked.
Exactly. So think of it like a two-dimensional problem. You know, how many plants can you fit in an acre?
Right.
We look at growing is more of a four-dimensional problem. How dense can we put the plants by not only going two-dimensionally but also going up and stacking them on top of each other, but then also by providing the perfect conditions for the plant, we're able to actually speed up the growth of the plant. So in California, they see like about four crops a year.
Right.
We get 26.
Whoa.
So where this all nets out to is, you know, in California, they grow 9.5 tons of lettuce per acre. We grow 1,300 tons per acre. So we've really been able to completely change the normal scenarios that you would see with producing food. So we can now produce this food wherever we want, regardless of the soil or climate conditions, and we can grow a lot of it in a very small space.
And the space you're using are those shipping containers?
That's
like
correct.
Those big, you know, that's on the back of trains and things like that? Those are shipping containers?
Exactly. If you see a container ship with all these goods that come from China,
right.
You may have heard that we import a lot more than we export. So,
I bet you we have lots of shipping containers here.
we do.
Because do they send them back? They don't send them back, do they?
They send back when
some
they
of them.
Can,
right.
But mostly they get stuck here.
Right.
And
that's
so
good for you.
It is. They provide a great environment for us, and they're very cheap, but they're standardized the world over. So when we build out a farm inside of a shipping container, we always know, regardless of where the shipping container came from, what it's going to be like to grow in.
And that's a plus, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it makes our business very scalable. They're like Legos. We can literally just build more production by adding a container.
So your supply chain guy, he must have been all over that.
You like
that,
huh?
You like the sound of that.
That was the right answer.
So all parts of the story. And Matt's a little modest. I mean, on the software side, too, he's developing proprietary software that helps control the growing environment, which is a really important element to how we get the production that we get by controlling CO2 and the other elements.
So you kind of have this little rectangular box, right? And then you lock it down so it's airtight, I guess, or you have to control the environment somehow.
That's correct. We do control the environment. We also control the nutrients that are delivered to
and
the plant.
And so it's filled. The entire thing is filled, not just the bottom.
It's packed
like in
full.
Normal,
correct.
Lettuce is just the ground. So yours is filling up that entire
you're
container.
You're up the walls?
Like yeah. It's really the one thing that's consistent is everybody who sees it says, this is not what I expected. Because it's hard to imagine what this would look
so
like.
So is it a like netting? How is it? I'm trying to imagine it.
It's actually more like racks of plants. If
racks,
you can imagine, just there's five different tiers inside of one of these containers.
From ground to the top.
That's correct.
All being controlled by this software, right? Monitoring
and
this
stuff?
And
then you're monitoring through the software the nutrients and to make sure that all of each plant is growing optimally?
Yeah, well, there's, you know, sort of an equation of how to grow a plant perfectly. And the goal is to actually fill in the variables of that equation based upon a few different things. What makes it complicated is not just growing the plant perfectly. They've been doing that in labs for years. The trick is how to make it economical.
Uh-huh.
So we have to look at things like, okay, well, what is the temperature outside? What is the price of power? You know, does it make sense to turn on the lights to make the plants grow, or does it make sense to turn them off because power is too expensive and it's too hot out? You know, there's a lot of complexity that comes to it.
And you've done it with lettuce.
We've done it with lettuce. We also grow a few other microgreens and a few specialty crops for restaurants right now. And we'll be expanding into other crops. A lot of people sort of ask, well, why lettuce? You know, I mean, it's not that great of a crop. Why not tomatoes? You know, I'd love a perfect tomato.
Tomato, exactly.
Right, but it turns out that tomatoes actually don't sell that well. Believe it or not,
really?
Lettuce is the second most consumed vegetable in the world after potatoes.
Huh.
And unlike potatoes, they're highly perishable, which is very important to our business because we want to be able to provide something very fresh that people are not used to seeing. The other thing that's great about lettuce is that you can't grow it here in Atlanta. It's really not appropriate for our climate. It's too cold in the winter, too hot in the summer. And so what we look for really is a product, a crop, that you can't grow locally that has huge volumes. And lettuce is the number one when it comes to that.
Now, what kind of lettuce is it? Iceberg on that spectrum, or is it, you know, romaine, you know, in terms of nutrients?
Well, it's actually neither. We grow a salad mix. So when you go to the grocery store and you see like a bag or clamshell of different varieties of salad, that's what we do. That's actually the fastest growing segment of lettuce specifically and of produce in general. It's about a $4.5 billion market right now, growing at 5% annually, which is pretty amazing when you consider that, you know, it's a commodity.
But where is it on the nutrient scale? Like, because iceberg, you know, is lettuce, but it has very little nutrients, where romaine is lettuce, and that has a whole bunch of nutrients.
We are on the high end of the scale. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the different varieties, there's your chopped iceberg mix, which is sort of, as you said, the lowest on the nutrient scale. As you go up, there's something called a spring mix product, which is where we fit in.
And now, is the objective when you're scaling, is it so that now I'm going to plop one of these containers at a school so they can get fresh produce like on a regular basis? Or is it something that you're putting these in strategic places and then you're distributing it to restaurants and different places?
It's definitely more of a strategic place scenario. As Brad mentioned, 95% of all lettuce is grown in California,
right,
and shipped throughout the country. But what's actually happening is there's about 13 different places in the country that are sort of the local distribution points for the region. In here in Atlanta, it's Forest Park. So we actually grow next to Forest Park because we can serve the entire region from Forest Park. And we didn't realize this when we first got into the business. We actually, our first farm was actually inside the city in the old Fourth Ward by City Hall East. And what we learned is that the distribution companies would drive a truck up to get our product and then drive
it
back
like
down to
hassle.
Forest Park. Yeah.
And you're like, why don't we just move it to you and save a step here?
Exactly. So that's actually the model going forward, is find out where the distribution is and grow it next to the distribution so you can shorten the supply chain as much as possible. And, you know, not only is that great for consumers because you get fresher product, but it's also great for us because there's less cost involved. You know, diesel is expensive and it's getting more expensive all the time. And coming from California, you know, that's a long trip.
Now, so, you're pesticide-free. And what's the distinction, if any, between pesticide-free and organic?
Well, it's an important distinction because most people assume that organic means no pesticides.
Uh-huh.
And that's not entirely true. In fact, they can have organic-derived pesticides on their product. So pesticide-free product is one that has no pesticides on it, obviously. And in our case, we don't use pesticides. We control the environment. We don't need pesticides. So we can avoid putting that on the leaves at all.
Now,
so we actually consider it superior to organic in the sense that,
you
know,
come
not
up
only
with your own term, trademark some term.
There you go. There you go.
You work on that. Now, if I'm the consumer, can I get this right now, or you're in the process of getting it into the stores? Where are you at on that?
Right now, about 90% of our product is being shipped to restaurants here in the Atlanta area. Most of the
so it is available at restaurants right now.
That's correct. And there's a few independent grocery stores that sell our product today in the Fourth Ward, Castleberry Hill, that sort of area. We are working right now with some grocery stores to actually get it in bigger name grocery stores, and we hope to have that launch this year.
We got to put Costanzo. Remember, we had Costanzo, Chef Costanzo, in here last week,
right, from Barando.
Yeah, we got to put him on you, man. So,
absolutely.
Price point on this stuff, is it a lot more expensive? Surely, it's a little more expensive.
No, absolutely
less?
Not. No, the goal here is for us to provide the same market price that you would expect from a conventional product, only to have a superior product. So, for example, Whole Foods test marketed our product in one of their stores in Sandy Springs, and they actually sold it for 50 cents less than organic. So, you know, we do expect that consumers will pay roughly the same price as they do now, but they'll get a better product.
Right.
And, you know, as a high-tech guy, that's sort of what we do, right? Better, faster, cheaper.
Right.
Right.
Call it Podganic. I'm going to trademark that if you guys don't do that.
You'll license it to me? That'd be great. Thank you.
You're not just growing these vegetables. You're also growing your management team. And it sounds to me like I have every reason to believe that you're growing money. How's it going? And why are you growing your management team?
Well, you know, we obviously have a big opportunity in the future here. You know, as I told you, lettuce in the United States is just a $4.5 billion market, but that's just lettuce. There's also spinach and a variety of other produce.
So spinach is next.
Spinach is next.
How about avocado? I mean, I'm all over the avocado. Avocado? No.
No, not necessarily a good market for okay. us, but, you know.
My daughter and I love avocado.
What about broccoli? That's not enough. That's a lot of nutrients.
It is, but broccoli is actually one of the cheapest things that you can possibly grow.
He's a businessman. Yeah, I mean, he's passionate and all that stuff, but he's done the math.
I would like to see this in all the schools. I mean, I think the schools need to have lettuce, like high-nutrient lettuce, I mean, is missing from the schools.
We're actually working with an interesting startup also in Atlanta called Lunch for Learners.
Uh-huh.
And what they do is they actually provide catered lunch service to the schools that don't have their own lunch programs.
It should only be for the smart kids.
And just last week, they switched over to using our lettuce. So we're excited about that because we, too, want to get our product in the kids' hands. You know, and we found, actually, that kids like lettuce that tastes good, as it turns out that – you know, most lettuce has no taste, and you have to put a bunch of dressing on it, and a lot of that dressing is bad for you.
Well, my kid doesn't like vegetables, but he'll eat salad all day long. So if you fill a big, robust salad, you're getting all those nutrients in the vegetables. I mean, I think that's a good thing for the school system to consider.
Well, one of our employees, his daughter says, "I don't like lettuce, but I like yours."
Right.
And, you know, that's the funny thing about eating healthy is with kids, it's actually really easy. If you give them something that tastes good, they will
exactly.
eat it.
It isn't that they don't like healthy food. They just don't like healthy food
They just
that
want to eat good
bad.
Stuff. Exactly.
So how can restaurants, chefs, and ultimately consumers find out more about you and learn more?
Well, you can get to us on our website at podponics.com. That's P-O-D-P-O-N-I-C-S. We're also on Facebook. Please become a fan. You can keep up with our growing story, if you will. And always, you know, whatever contact information you need is right there on the website.
So you're looking for Atlanta restaurants to start using your product? That would help you guys out?
Absolutely. But we'll sell to anybody. We're not
even individual consumers can't buy it, can they?
They can from direct? And we're if they come to us and say, "Where can I buy this?" We will happily tell them where they can find it. And if they can't find it in their area, we'll figure out a way. Because at the end of the day, if we can get this in everybody's hands, they will see that fresh really matters, local really matters. And as people understand that this is a better product than just straight organic, I think that'll really change the market.
Well, I'll tell you, we have some contacts at some of the restaurants in the Cordon Bleu. We have
the cooking school. We've got several chefs
we'd love
come
to connect you with, and maybe you can get your lettuce over there.
Absolutely. That'd be great.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming in, guys. That
Thank
was fun.
Guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yes, sir. Until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, our guests this morning, Wendy Kinney, Cap Scatz, Brad Bruckman, and Mr. Matt Liotta, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the Fast Lane.